this truth of the head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Yesterday, I began to discuss Santi, who is an agnostic, and he blogged about an American Right to Life video on Ann Coulter and Mitt Romney. And so Santi, being an agnostic, I thought it would be interesting to just respond. Actually, at the time I responded, I wasn't sure he was an agnostic, but I did know that he would disagree with or even make fun of someone who criticized those who advocate killing unborn children. So Santi, who we call Prometheus also from his blog, Santi A. Ferella, he wrote, "Here are some far-right radio and internet media broadcasters laying in on Ann Coulter and Mitt Romney. This is what the Republican Party has become." And so that was it. And he posted, he embedded the Ann Coulter video. And by the way, it's approaching 40,000 YouTube views. So you might want to help American Right to Life. Just go to AmericanRightToLife.org and click on Ann Coulter in the right column. And you could watch that video. You could email a copy of it, the link to it, to a friend, post it on a blog or a website. It's just a great video. And this is a good milestone, 40,000 views for an Ann Coulter video criticizing her from the pro-life side. So it's a worthwhile documentary, a mini documentary at YouTube. It's called Ann Coulter Hangups, the Ann Coulter Hangups. So what would you write, what would you post to Prometheus, to Santi? This is what I wrote. Prometheus, do you realize that God made us and that we are accountable to him? That's it. Bob Inyart, KGov, KGOV.com. Bob Inyart, KGov.com. And so Santi Ferella, he wrote back, "Bob, I'm happy to concede that we are living within an ontological mystery." I thought we were living in the world. Turns out we're living in an ontological mystery. "But could you offer me some justification for your claim that God made us? How do you know this? Secondly, I'd like to ask you a personal question. When you doubt, what is it exactly that you doubt?" Signed, Santi. And I enjoy both of those. That's very polite of him to ask, you know, what are your reasons for claiming that God made us? And what kind of doubts do you have? Those are good questions. And so I wrote back, and what we're going to get to first here is a list of doubts and things that I never doubt. But I wrote back, "Hello, Santi. I've had a great time debating atheists, and I'd be happy to post a concise list of evidence for God's existence from 10 areas if you'd like. And by the way, here's a list of atheists we've debated at kgov.com, and you could go to kgov and listen to these debates and listen to a discussion of this evidence. And I also mentioned the trochlea challenge we have to atheists. Do you know what a trochlea is? If you're a public school teacher, please ask one of your students, how do you spell trochlea? And look it up. You could do a Google search for trochlea challenge. And we had an artist, we commissioned an artist to do a drawing of a trochlea, the sling, on a muscle for the human eye. And we asked atheists, how could that evolve? That one little tiny bit of the human vision system, the littlest tiny bit you could imagine, and how that little tiny bit could evolve is in itself devastating to Darwinian evolution, absolutely devastating, because a sling would confer no value until it functioned, at least minimally. And there are all different parts and components to this sling functioning. And so they'd all have to come into place by instructions in your DNA before it would become valuable. So anyway, Trocklia challenge. But I said, Santi, I've had the opportunity to debate ABC's Reginald Finley, called the infidel guy, atheist, and Theology Online's resident atheist psychologist, Zakith, and Freedom From Religion Foundation's Dan Barker. You might remember him. And the guy who wrote God.com, the book, John Henderson. And then there's the famous anti-creationist with the National Center for Science Education, Eugenie Scott. And we did a recap 10 years later, Bob and Your Live exhumes Eugenie Scott, where she said, I asked her for an hour, what's your best evidence for any higher function that it evolved, like eyesight or hearing or flight or echolocation or whatever? And finally, after asking her for an hour, she offered one bit of evidence, and that was junk DNA. And I said, Eugenie Scott, don't you think that we're just beginning, this is back in the 1990s, that we're just beginning to understand genetics? We're just at the beginning of the learning curve? And so when we call this stuff junk DNA, we really don't know what we're talking about? And she said, absolutely not. We now know most of what we'll ever learn about DNA. And I said, I jotted down the date and the time. I said, Eugenie, I'm jotting down what you just said, and I'm going to give you an opportunity to take it back right now because it's absurd. And here we are 10 years later, and as it turns out, the junk DNA is not junk. Over and over and over and over the technical literature, the junk is not junk. It has vital functions. And then a debate with an editor with Scientific American. And is he the founder of the Skeptic Society, Michael Shermer? And the famous 73-second excerpt with Michael Shermer when I asked him, I said, Michael, I know that we disagree. You're an atheist. I'm a Christian. But can we start with some common ground? Can you at least agree that the Bible was correct when it stated on page one that the sun is a light? The Bible says the sun, moon, and the stars should not be worshipped because they're not gods. And Genesis chapter 1 says the sun is a light. So could we at least begin our discussion with an agreement that the Bible was right on that one point that the sun is a light? And Michael Shermer famously said, the sun is not a light. Okay. So where do you go with these people? Where do you go with these people? What is a light? One of those little curly things they sell at Home Depot? If the sun is not a light, what is a light? Does a light need to have mercury gas in it to poison your kids when a bulb breaks? So I said, Santi, I could post that list of 10 areas of evidence, or I could post 7 atheist cliches, each with a rebuttal that takes less than 8 seconds to make. Thanks, Bob Enyart. So Santi wrote back, Bob, sure, you can put them on this thread. I don't mind, but I would like you to improvise a bit and not just go into machine mode in talking to me. What do you doubt when you doubt, and why do you doubt it? And what do you tell yourself to make the doubt go away for a while, Santi? Now, these are great questions. Some atheists and some agnostics are what I would call dishonest agnostics. An honest agnostic is someone who says, I don't know what the evidence for God is, but if it's there, I would like to see it. That would be an honest agnostic. A dishonest agnostic or atheist is somebody who says, I don't want to see evidence for God. So Santi sounds like he may be an honest, you know, as far as it goes, deep down, people know there's a God and they're in denial because the evidence for God is clearly seen, as we read in Romans chapter 1, through the creation. But he's asking, he says, go ahead, you can put your evidence on this thread. And he's asking me, when you doubt, what do you doubt? And what do you tell yourself to make the doubt go away for a while? And so I'm going to respond to that, but right away I realize that Santi is saying that he doubts. He doubts his worldview. And he has to tell himself things now and then to make the doubt go away, but then it comes back. So I have hope. I think it's enjoyable talking to people about the Lord. So he added, Bob, I'm not asking you such a question, by the way, to set you up. I just want vulnerability expressed in the people I talk with. When I doubt my agnosticism, and he does acknowledge that, that's good, it's with regard to the ontological mystery. There we go again. He said we're living within an ontological mystery. I thought we were living in the world. I thought we were living in the universe. I thought we were part of the cosmos. Turns out we're living in an ontological mystery. How did we get in there? Who wrote it? Man. An ontological mystery, existence, reality. Why are we here? Where did that word come from anyway, ontological mystery? My producer in the other room, one of our producers, Will Duffy, and he teaches Greek, New Testament Greek. Ontological. Is that what we think it's from? Anta and logos? Logia? Logos, the word, which also means idea, and the study of. So the study of Jesus is called the word, the logos. And the verb to be, the Greek verb to be, right? I've never taught Greek. I studied it about 5 years, took Greek 1 five times, I think. So, okay, not really Greek 1 five times, but had studied Greek in college, did real well, enjoyed it because the New Testament is written in Greek. So, yeah, the study of being, the study of being. So when I doubt my agnosticism, it's with regard to the ontological mystery. With existence, he's saying, with reality. Why is there something when there might have been nothing? So Santi's saying, I do have doubts once in a while, and there should have been nothing, but I'm here. So why am I here? That's a good place to begin. Why are you here? You know, some people have been Darwinists for so long, they don't even know if they're here or not. They just throw these intellectual tantrums, and you say, do you exist? And they say, I don't know. And at that point, I say, well, I can't win an argument with someone who doesn't exist, so let's end this for now. Once you figure out that you exist, we'll have coffee. But until then, you're on your own. So Santi writes, I think that the physical constraints, their just-soedness, is an enormous puzzle. Now, you know what he's talking about, the physical constraints? We have a DVD that we sell called The Privileged Planet, and it does a tremendous job of showing these physical formulas and how extraordinary it is that the physical universe is tuned just so to permit its existence, its functioning, and our existence. And if one of dozens of particulars was off by 1% or 3% or a tenth of a percent, everything would break and fall apart. And so that's what Santi A. Ferrella is referring to, Prometheus here. He's saying, I think that the physical constants, that they're all just so. They're just right. What, by accident? That is an enormous puzzle. And it constitutes, to my mind, perhaps the strongest argument that before the universe, there was some sort of telos. I don't know why he insists on speaking Greek. I don't know if he took Greek. But he's saying before the universe, there was some sort of purpose, some sort of reason, some kind of plan which made the universe. And, yeah, he's right. That is good evidence for the existence of a creator because the universe is just so. And if it was ever so slightly out of whack, then it'd be broken. Now, when I debated Zaketh, and we sell this debate, we have it bound, does God exist? Bob Enyart versus Zaketh, 10-round moderated written debate, couple hundred pages. It's a really fun debate, but you have to be interested in these topics and a bit interested in science to enjoy the debate. Otherwise, it's some work. But people who love it, they can't put it down. And I said to Zaketh in that debate, I said, now, Zaketh, I know you're going to be faced with a dilemma of trying to explain very complex things like life and the DNA molecule and a single-celled creature, organism, and the solar system and the universe. You're going to have to explain these things, and you're going to want to say that they just arose without any creator by chance. And you're going to want to suggest a way that that could happen. You're trying to explain the complexity. And so you're going to want to try to present little tiny baby steps, like Darwin suggested, that when they all added up, it explained complexity. Well, you're going to have a hard time with that. And here's what you're probably going to do. So please don't do this. When you're trying to explain the existence of something complex, you're going to try to justify it. Please don't explain it by invoking wildly more complex solutions. Please don't do that. Because we know from the beginning that you'll be inclined to do that, and don't do it. You'll be cheating and we'll spot it. And he did it. He can't help himself. And so Santi A. Ferella, he does that here. He says, you know, I suppose a strong argument for a creator is the fact that the universe is just so. Its constants are all so finely tuned. And I suppose that I stay an agnostic and not some sort of theist when I think about this, because I think that the multiverse hypothesis is equally probable. So Santi just did the same thing. He says, I really can't explain why the universe is just so. So to explain that, I think there might be thousands of universes or millions of universes or an infinite number of universes. And so to try to explain something, forget about Occam's razor, just throw that right out. So for trying to explain the complexity of something, a desperate person invokes additional wild complexity, infinitely more complex than the complexity he was trying to explain. So, okay. Then he writes, on the other hand, the multiverse hypothesis runs to an infinite regress. And so it seems simpler to say that there was a creator who made the universe. Just seems simpler. And Santi, you're right. It is simpler. Now, simpler doesn't always mean true. But so I wrote, Santi, you request that I improvise and not go into machine mode, and that's a great request. Now, you asked, what do I doubt? What do I doubt? I doubt that as the mountain of evidence utterly refuting Darwinism continues to rise, that a majority of evolutionists will acknowledge our Creator God. I doubt that. I doubt it. But wait, I'm sure that's not the kind of doubt you're asking me about. You're asking me to indicate, of the beliefs that I hold, which ones do I sometimes doubt? Now, to help myself think through this, I'll first list the things I never, ever doubt. And then I listed the things I don't doubt. And I hope Santi could see in this that I'm not in machine mode. I'm responding, and I'm thinking about his question. And so what do I doubt? Well, let me first think of the things that I never doubt. And right off the bat, the first, and I list about 10 things. I start off, I never doubt that I exist. I never doubt that I exist. Now, that's more than Captain Kirk Johnson could say for himself. He is the curator of the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. My boys went to that museum just yesterday. And they came back with so many fun stories about what's true, what's false in the museum. And they're good at spotting it because they're ages 8, 10, and 12. So Captain Kirk Johnson, we asked him. There's a reporter with the Colorado Springs Gazette there. There's a group of a dozen, 20 of us. It's a day when we went to the museum with about 50 or 60 Christians and toured the museum with a member of the media. And Captain Kirk Johnson, the curator, he came out to join our tour. And then I pointed out that something he said, one of his displays, the exhibit, at children's eye level, it says, human teeth evolved from fish scales. And I said, Kirk, wouldn't it have been better to say to kids that some believe, or it's been theorized, or some people think that human teeth evolved from fish scales? You're telling it to them as though it's a fact, as though it's true and you have the proof. And he thought he was Pontius Pilate, and he said to me, what is truth? So I'm thinking, Kirk, is your defense for every exhibit here in this museum that nothing is really true or false, so it doesn't matter what you say? So it's all just your religion, your secular humanism? It doesn't matter if you have scientific evidence or not? And I said, well, of course there's truth. Some things are true, some things are not true. Don't you believe in truth? And he couldn't answer. He said, I don't know. So I said, well, again, I'm looking for common ground. So I said, Kirk Johnson, do you exist? And the reason I ask him that is because if he can acknowledge that he exists, then he will agree that there is some truth, because the fact that he exists is true. I said, do you exist? And he said, I don't know. He doesn't know. Now, either it's an intellectual tantrum, or he is just a very disciplined, godless human being whose atheism is leading him to its natural conclusion, which is complete ignorance. Complete ignorance. Atheism leads you to ignorance. So I answered, Santi, I never doubt that I exist, and therefore I know that there is a reality. Now, I had a liberal call on the TV show a while back. We're re-airing the TV show, by the way, in the Denver market on the weekends, Friday and Saturday night at midnight. And we're airing the best of the best shows. And people watching them are just, they're enjoying it. They're laughing. They're celebrating it. And this is the age of TiVo and DVRs. So even if you're asleep at midnight, you just set your TV, your satellite cable, DVR, set it to record, channel 53 at midnight, LaCie Broadcasting, KWHD, full power. It's a high-definition station on cable, and you could record it. But a liberal called in and said, Bob, I create my own reality. There is no reality. I create my own reality. And I asked, well, then why did you create me? And the liberal was stymied, didn't know what to say. I said, why did you create the HIV virus? You cruel individual. So I never doubt that I exist, and therefore I know that there is a reality. Santi, I never doubt that truth exists because, for example, I exist. I never doubt that the universe exists. I never doubt that the universe must have had a beginning because it does not have a uniform temperature. And stars are still burning available energy. So I know that the universe must exist. And by the way, that's what the Bible says in the first verse. And it wasn't until the 20th century after Darwin that the secular atheistic world pretty much agreed and embraced the concept that the universe had a beginning. They called it the Big Bang. And you could call it that if you want. God stretched out the heavens in the beginning. And so I wrote, since truth exists, I never doubt that logic and reason exist. Some things are true, others are not true. Since logic and reason exist, I never doubt that the effect cannot be greater than the cause. And since the effect cannot be greater than the cause, like, for example, if you rub together two apples you buy in King Supers, you're not going to get a nuclear explosion, a 10 megaton explosion, if you knock two apples together in the produce section. And since the effect cannot be greater than the cause, I never doubt that logically there must be an uncaused cause of the universe and of my own existence as a person. And I never doubt that if Jesus Christ did not rise from the dead as prophesied, that Christianity is false. I never doubt that. In fact, the New Testament says that. Paul wrote that in 1 Corinthians 15. If Christ is not risen, then Christianity is false. Take that, United Methodist. I never doubt that if Jesus Christ did not rise from the dead, that Christianity is false. Nor have I ever doubted that if Jesus Christ did rise from the dead, then all other religions are wrong, and as he claimed, he is the only way to eternal life. And I never doubt that the cause of the universe and of me must be eternal and powerful and personal. Because I am personal, that is, I have a will, self-awareness, moral consciousness, and the effect, that is me, cannot be greater than the cause, that is him. Santi, these are some of the things I never doubt. Now, what do I sometimes doubt? What do I sometimes doubt? And I address that as we continue, and we'll do this next week. Bob and you're live on KGov, KGOV.com. Next month, our telethon, our goal is $40,000 to stay on the internet for another year. First-time listeners or givers, please help, and you'll jumpstart our September telethon. Maranatha, what a great school.